Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 28th of September, 2020. On the podcast today, Ed Dawson, Managing Director of Prospex Energy, PXEN, ticker there, and Ed discusses their achievements in the last 6 months and milestones to come in the next 6 months. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Open Orphan, Kingfisher PLC, Castillo Copper. And of course, as always, at the end of the podcast, I'll be highlighting two lists, and they are the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk, where there's a host of other content. Check it out there. There's blog articles, there's videos, there's podcasts, and COVID-19 index. Let's have a look. Top riser today on that index is Modern Water, up 13.2% to 3.4 pence. Biggest faller, GenDrive, down 11.86% to 104. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ed Dawson, Managing Director of Prospex Energy. PXEN is the ticker. Ed, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me on.
It's all good. Listen, you released half your report last week, and it's always good to look back at what's been achieved, and also a chance to look forward and what we hope to achieve. But it's hard to predict the future, as we know now from COVID, and no one saw that coming, or the market didn't, even though the market's supposed to price everything in. So first and foremost, before we get into it, a 10-30 second summary of what Prospex Energy is all about, please, if you could.
Yeah, Prospex Energy is an AIM investment company. We have projects that are gas in three countries. We have some production in Romania, a project that is waiting final permitting in Italy, and in Spain we have two projects there. One, Tesorillo, which is a entry possibly into a 1950s well that produced gas to the surface. It looks like a bypass gas field. Potentially huge, 800 BCF. But we also, at the start of the year, the local company did a deal to buy a power station near Seville. The power station consumes gas and from its own gas fields, and there's lots of follow-on opportunity there. So diversified portfolio, gas exposure, but going full cycle from exploration to production to generation of electricity as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk about, because we were just looking at your valuation here. It's, you took more, 1.5 million market cap. So, the potential upside is big, and you could argue that what's the downside here? But so let's talk about, first and foremost, maybe, looking forward, milestone-wise, what news are you expecting? What have you given guidance to the market? What's next in development of these assets?
Yeah. Well, the Italian asset, Selva, mm-hmm. is waiting for final environmental ministry approval in Italy. To date, it's had all the local approvals, and it has all the technical approvals from an environmental ministry and stuff like that. And our partners there, the operator, is guiding final approval for the fourth quarter of this year. What does that mean? That means if it comes in, production sometime first half of next year. And, you know, we expect it to come on to, up to a rate of up to 150 standard cubic meters a day. And again, that will, depending on gas price at the time, equate to a million and a half, 2 million of euros net to us on an annualized basis. So, you know, we start generating some serious cash from that.
I'm sorry, when do you think that'll be? Because you're waiting for the sign-off. So do you have any idea when the sign-off will happen?
Well, we have 1/6 of the project. We're not the operator. The operator is guiding the fourth quarter of this year.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. And as far as the funding there, you say you will need the fund, but this won't be equity funded. Is that right?
Well... The capital cost of the projects is around 2.5 million euros, which again, if you model out the reserves, it's somewhere maybe 3-4%, depending on prices, of the whole of the capital. You know, your capital expenditure at the start of the project is very low in terms of total cash generated. So it's very low risk, and obviously, so therefore, it's the sort of thing that the industry would fund. It wouldn't necessarily, you know, go to look for outside equity for that. So that's good.
Your share of that is what? It's around about 400,000, is it, euro?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Marvellous. Yeah. Okay, so that's happening. So let's move on to Spain. Let's go across Europe a bit there. So what's happening in Spain and what's coming up there?
In Spain, obviously, we announced a deal in February. That transaction is subject to approval, government approval in Madrid. That has continued to progress even with COVID. And, you know, to date, we've crossed all the hurdles required to do that. And we would anticipate, again, maybe in the next quarter, that finally happening. So then we get control of this power station. The power station is running at 22% capacity. In time, we would like to increase that by drilling up one of 11 very low risk prospects, which are all in the valley, just, you know, going east-west near Seville in Spain. So again, that would be low cost drilling, low risk, and means we could, you know, step up cash to cash generation for the business. So that'd be great.
Yeah. And of course, you mentioned Romania there. So take us through what's happening there at the moment.
Romania, we have one well producing there. It's a steady away. Actually, it's producing more in the first 6 months than it did on a per day basis than last year, so that's good. Yeah, so Romania's steady away.
Okay. And so essentially, the near or mid to near term, I suppose, is obviously in Italy, Selva. And so you're saying essentially that could be generating close to your entire valuation in a year in revenue. Is that right?
Yes. I can see how that happens quite easily, yeah.
Oh.
But there again, I hope the market cap doesn't stay this low for long. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. Marv said, and so you mentioned COVID there. Have you been affected, or is things pretty much, you know, you're operating on email pretty much, and it's all okay?
We're working a lot better than I'd hoped. Obviously, we've projects in Italy and in Spain. We installed some stuff in the field in Italy, so you know you can get access to the field. You know, civil servants are working from home. Likewise in Spain. Once we got the civil servants' mobile phones, you know, that was great because, you know, they've continued to work from home. You know, the technicians there were positive about the project and, you know, they're keen to get it moving forward. So they've been helpful. Yeah,
excellent stuff. Okay, Ed. Well, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making here and the milestones coming up, but are not yet following the story, given those three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Prospects Energy to their watch list, please.
Well, I clearly like the sector, but I think it's important to recognise that we are solely gas, which is the sort of transition fuel in Europe, and I think the market and individuals are becoming increasingly aware of that. So I think we are in a good sector, as opposed to a sector that could be discounted for what it's doing. We're clearly diversified with a number of projects, but also importantly, each of the individual projects have, you know, follow-on opportunities behind them. And as you alluded to, Justin, we are trading at a big discount to our balance sheet of £6 million, and I think there are a number of opportunities for a re-rating to come forward in the coming months.
Excellent stuff, Ed. Good to chat to you. Hopefully, we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Well, thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Greenstocks, CEO of Brand Communications. You're
Alan Greenstocks, thank you. That's a new one. I've been called worse, but that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Well, no, it's because you come on and obviously you promote stocks, so you know, you hope to see them in the green. So, I thought, you know,
if you said Alan Greenspan, I'd have understood, but, you know, that's...
He's still around, isn't he? He's still dragging him out on CNBC, he's slowing down. You know, he looks a bit like a reptile these days. But
well, he does. He's got this cadaverous sort of these cadaverous features, hasn't he? And you know, it looks as though
the
lifeblood is slowly being drawn out of him.
He looks a bit like a turtle. He's an old turtle. Yeah, right. Now, if you didn't know who he was, of course, he was ex-head of the Fed. But I saw him once on CNBC, and I thought, if people didn't know who he was, they'd think, why are they talking to this old man? Just, he looks a bit old, because he was very slow. And I thought, fair play, he's got a lot of experience. But it's a pity, you know, his physicality is letting him down a little bit. But that's old age, I suppose. You know, it's a pity, isn't it? At least, you know, I thought the most important thing about old age is having your mental faculties. I would still like to be investing, like, you know, when I'm 80, you know? Because if you do, even if you're sitting there, you can't get around a bit. Even if you're in a wheelchair, it'd be nice to be able to still invest, you know?
Well, the plan is to invest now while you're in full control of your faculties to make enough money so you can just sit back and enjoy the proceeds. But
I just like investing, though, didn't you? I'd like to invest.
I agree.
By that time, hopefully, we'll be breaking even.
Yes. Yeah, would have made back those losses on some of those penny stocks we punted on 10 or 15 years ago, yeah.
It's one of the things I like when I invest in, right, is that it's, I think you see people, you know, a nice old ripe old age and they're still investing. I like that because it's, and as long as you've got your mental faculties, like I said, you can still do it. It's one of those things that will still keep you occupied and still keep you connected, you know, and it's active, so not just passive, just watching telly, you know. It means you do read stuff, and so it's one of the things that it can be a hobby for life, you know. And
I agree completely, and I think you know, obviously Warren Buffett's a fine example of a born such person, and you know, he's still engaged. I think we work in them, and we're here because we love the process, and there's nothing better than, you know, investing into an early stage stock, doing your research, and then having that pay off, and the stock becomes a 10 bagger. It's a great feeling, but also I think you look at a lot of the older folks operating in the market, and you know, there's still lots of old brokers smokers that I know, and when I went to London, which I'm obviously not doing at the moment, but you'd see these guys on the train, and yeah, they're still beautifully dressed, and they just go to the city because they love the whole process. You know, the broking business, the process of investing, trading, everything. It's it's a great world to be in, and I think we're fortunate, you know, and you never stop learning, of course, but it is a great way, you know, to build your future security. And
Buffett, he's 90 years of age. Let's be honest, he doesn't invest for money now, but he invests because he likes business. And I do. I've always been fascinated by business and seeing what will work and what. And you know, like I said, he doesn't care about the market, pretty much. The market has shut down for 5 years, but he's investing in the business, not stocks. And, you know, he's not in for trading and all that stuff. So, but yeah, and he's worth about, what, 80 billion or something like that. So he's doing quite well. But but it's not about the money for him now, is it? It's just, just trying to find good businesses and investing in them, you know?
Well, there is another theory, of course. Maybe he lost so much money on penny stocks that he's still trying to make it back. And of course, you see a lot of these actors and actresses around, like, Harvey Keitel and Kevin Bacon. They're doing EE ads and Direct Line ads and what have you. And of course, all these guys put their money with Bernie Madoff, didn't they? And the Ponzi scheme a few years ago. And of course, Bernie Madoff with their money. And that's why they're still working, which is very sad. So yeah, it's a fascinating world we're in.
We from positive here to negative, yeah. Well, anyway, let's go to a positive here. Hopefully, get stocks on positive.
Let's get positive about stocks.
And sadly, they're skint in the later years. Anyway, right, let's move on. Go on.
Okay, right, starting off with Open Orphan. ORPH is the epic go, and of course we have spoken about Open Orphan many times. But the company has, I guess you'd say it's flagship operation, which was, of course, resulted from the HVIVA merger early this year, and owns the largest quarantine centre in Northern Europe at Queen Mary's Hospital in London. And it's made the press on many, many occasions because, of course, the COVID testing, the flu testing that they undertake there. And Open Orphan has evolved and is developing into, certainly through the reverse takeover of Venn Life Sciences and then the acquisition of HVIVO, a contract research organization. It earns money from HVIVO, which turns over about 15 million a year, or turned over about 15 million a year. And of course, Venn Life Sciences, which is the primary contract research organization within the group. Now, the company announced this morning it had won another 4.3 million contract with a top 10 global pharmaceutical or vaccine company that will be undertaken by Venn Life Sciences, who are already working with the likes of Ipsen Pharma, you know, huge multi-billion pound company. And of course, they have the virtual rep service where clients pay to promote their products via the virtual rep service to key opinion leaders and people within the industry, so they can, if you like, trial the product on the experts before it goes out there. In addition, they have a genomic database, and that the value of that database is up to £3,000-£3,500 sterling per patient. And researchers pay to access that database, I think the database runs into tens of thousands. The company's currently got a value of 121 million. It's obviously grown rapidly over the past year.
It's more now after today's rise. It's about 126 million, I think. It's gone up.
126 million. Yeah, it's pushing highs. That this was a delayed price earlier, so it has pushed higher since the open. Yes, indeed. You're right. It's 125 million. Okay, all right. Well, my screen says 125. There we go. Who's splitting hairs?
What are you looking at?
I'm on HL, the HL site.
So, they haven't updated the shares, an issue of there, really.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I think they have, so...
They haven't, I know. It's 126.47 million at 19 pence. That's what it is.
Okay. All right. I'll take your word for it. So of course, Open Orphan are forging ahead, and what the chairman, Cal Friel, I think is,
What's a million quid between friends, Al?
What's only good between friends? But Cal Friel has done a fantastic job in building the company up, and he promised when the merger was complete that he would bring the the enlarged entity or the combined group to profitability by the end of the year. And we're about to hear on Wednesday this week the company announce its interim results. There's an analyst call for 10:30, so I think a lot of eyes are going to be on that. And I believe the share price rise can be partially attributed to that, but also the announcement last week where the company said that they are in line for a contract with the government to undertake testing, COVID testing, and the value of that contract is estimated to be in the region of £7 million. So if you put all that together...
Yeah, well, and what I like about that is in excess of £7 million. So you'd suggest that £7 million is minimum. Do you know what I like about this, right? Listen, Kyle is very good. He's pivoted into a hot area. Because let's be honest, they're called Open Orphan. But the orphan drug designation side of the business is not really playing into that at all. It's more towards the COVID side of it and their challenge model, which is very good. It's a very hot area. But what's good about this is that, you know, when it cools down a bit, the COVID side, they've still got a business there that's very good. You know, it's a CRO business, helping a service company for pharmaceuticals. Plus, they've got the blue sky opportunity in their vaccine, of course, or they're developing that as well, but it doesn't cost them anything. And they can go back to that, you know, genomic database and open an orphan sort of helping studies. But it's very clever. He's very pivoted to a really hot area, Kyle. But now you can go back to the original business model when the COVID cools down, because it will cool down. I mean, I think testing's going to be here for at least another 6 months, 12 months. But I think by then, you know, a vaccine will be around. And so, not as much testing will be done. I know hot testing stocks, you know, are very hot. And I had people shouting at me on Twitter on the weekend when I suggested that when the vaccine's announced, sentiment-wise, I think the bombed-out stocks will rise. The hot stocks, the COVID test stocks may, you know, start to go down, drop, because they realise by that time, it's only a matter of time before they start rolling out the vaccine. And the ones that have come the head of the Americans are mad, are they? The head of the Operation Warp Speed program has said there could be one out announcement on clinical phase 3 trials the end of October. That's Pfizer. And he said he reckons the extremely vulnerable population of America could be vaccinated before the end of the year. The rest of the US could be vaccinated before quarter one. So I'm not saying testing stops then. Of course it won't. There'll still be testing needed widely, because even if you get the vaccine, people maybe need to test whether the vaccine's worked. You know, so there'll still be testing around for a while. But I just think that announcement of a vaccine being available will be generally good for the market sentiment. That is non-COVID testing stocks. Everything else, I think, like the bombed-out holiday stocks and airlines and all that stuff, will rally, I think, you know, because they'll see a light at the end of the tunnel. But listen, Kyle has played a very good, clever game here. He's in the very hot space, but he can pivot back to where it was in the open orphan space, or the orphan space. Orphan testing. So that's very clever, you know, very clever guy.
Exactly. Yeah, the offering is that diversified that they have a solid core business anyway. Never mind COVID. And what I also like is that Carl is a major shareholder in the business. He's got skin in the game to the tune of just under 7%, and that, you know, that on any level is attractive. But just also want to draw your attention to relative valuations as well. So of course, hVIVO and Quotient are undergoing, using the Quotient Mosaic antibody system. They've developed an antibody test for COVID, and Quotient currently is trading on the Nasdaq. QTRT is the epicode. Has a valuation somewhere in the region of $660 million, and it turns over $31 million a year. It's loss making, and yet it has this value. Now, in my opinion, I'm sure this is already under consideration, but if Orphan went for a dual listing, I think the valuation of the business, because the revenues they're going to turn over on this year are going to be many times in excess, I believe, of what Quotient is turning over. So just on that metric alone, the way US investors and the way the US biotech and pharma investors value stocks, they value it completely differently. And we've seen it with other companies too. They'll dual list in the US, and all of a sudden, if they have a UK listing, the UK listing rockets in value. Happened with a company called Myriad the other week, but that's in the technology sector. So, you know, I think that's the next step for Open Orphan, and I do believe that they will probably be looking at their listing in the US at this point. And they've got a very attractive business, which is still very scalable and still set for huge growth. So, yeah, 126 million sterling valuation now. You know, where are we going to be in 6 months' time?
Definitely. He's a very clever guy, Kyle. I speak to him when he comes on the podcast. We have a pre-chat, and he's a sharp guy. And I have no doubt this will go on, keep going on. But like I said, I don't know what the it'd be interesting to see what the revenue is, actually, because I don't know what. First of all, I know they've announced lots of contracts with nice figures, you know, six figures, seven figures. And so, but I don't know which will land in this year or next year, financial year. But they're generally, he's really are. You know, sort of shooting up these contracts is very impressive. And like I said, I think it was like quarantine. Like I said, so they're
HVIVA already turns at 15 million plus per annum. So that's there before anything else.
What's very impressive though is their unit, like Europe's only commercial 24 bedroom unit, is now like it apparently wasn't they booked up that much, but 25-30% occupancy rate there, and now. They're almost going to be booked up to the Q1 2021, but the reckoning's going to be longer than that. Could be, what is it? It was saying somewhere that it was, I'm sure it was going to be booked up for major part of next year. So,
Q's around the block. Literally.
Yeah. And they may even expand. If they take on that government, of course, that government contract, where those big companies are looking at testing and all that stuff, they may have to even expand somewhere. So,
That's the next step, isn't it? You know, all the work's coming to them. They're a contract research organisation. All the big farmers are coming to them to use them. So they're going to expand their facilities. They'll probably build another quarantine facility somewhere now, which would obviously, you know, be superb for the company. But I still think in terms of valuation, where they are now, that they are still materially undervalued and I do think it's a natural evolution for them. The next step to take, I believe, would be a US listing, you know, possibly on the NASDAQ, and then we would see it fly. I mean, it's happened to with Tizian Life Sciences, so who already had the US listing, and you know, that stock has really flown high. So,
but hang on, know yet. We speculate on something. We don't know what's going to happen because
there's been no mention of
them listing on that.
If I was CEO or chairman of that company, that's what I'd be pushing for, and you know, Cal's a bright guy. He's got all his ducks lined up, and I'm sure that would be under consideration.
He's got his ducks lined up as well, has he? I didn't realise that. I didn't realise he had ducks and he lined them up. That's quite impressive. But because he's a busy man, he hasn't got time to sort of mess around with ducks. But you know.
No, he has. When you see him in his office, he's got all these ducks on.
Nailed to a board. That's the way to do it.
That's the one.
Yeah, but you know what? I kept banging on about Open Orphan. I held some stocks and I exited too early. But I kept banging on about it about 6 pence. When Kyle raised double the value of the company currently at twice the share price, which was very impressive, and he also brought in institutions. I thought that never happens. You very rarely get someone raising double the value of the company as it was at double the share price and bringing in two institutions at that level. Well, that doesn't happen. I thought that says a lot about Kyle, you know. And of course, it's gone from 6 pence now to 18 pence. So there we are, and it's just maybe just a start. Who knows?
Well, I still hold. I bought in at 5.5p, and again at 7p, and I'm just that's one tucks away, because you know I do believe all of the elements are in place for the stock for it to push much higher. And as you rightly say, yeah, he bought the institutions with him. Invesco, I think at last check, had 7.9% of the company. So you know, big institutional holdings, and you know, this is everything's happening. This is becoming the go-to company for testing and contract research. So. Yeah, great future.
Marvelous stuff. Cool. I think we've covered enough for Up North from there. And Kyle, I think Kyle's coming on this week as well. So hopefully. Well, anyway. And what's next, Al?
Okay, just want to refer back to Kingfisher, which produced a very interesting set of results last week.
Interesting
results.
In what way?
Well, just interesting in that...
As in poor? As in, you know...
Well, in that the market has come to them because, of course, of lockdown. With lockdown, the company said that people who normally go out to spend money on leisure and entertainment and holidays, of course, they can't spend that money on leisure, entertainment, and holidays. So it's gone on home improvement. So as a result, the B&Q websites and in France the Castorama and Brico Depot websites have all been seen a huge boost in online trade. And I think the company said online sales had grown 360-odd%. It was an absolutely incredible performance. And although the sales overall fell originally in quarter one, they came back strongly in quarter two. Free cash flow was up 800-odd million, and the company also said it was handing back the furlough payments it received from the government because of this huge surge in I've just reread 164% increase in online sales.
So e-commerce sales up 164%, now 19% of total group sales, so you know, a fifth of sales. I assume that will grow, and there we are.
And also analysts were predicting adjusted profits of 360-odd million. They came in with pre-tax up 23% to 415 million. So that's a first half performance. But also the momentum has continued into quarter three. UK sales are up 19%. Sales in France up 16.5%. And they're experimenting with new formats, including a pilot scheme with Asda to introduce mini B&Qs into Asda. So, during the lockdown, I've certainly been to B&Q on a number of occasions to buy tins of paint and various other bits and pieces, queued around the block. And
what colour paint do you buy, Al?
White. White. Yeah. We decorate the house white, all the bedrooms white, and then hang stuff on the wall, and they're nice light rooms, and it's a great canvas onto which hang, which then
don't go trendy, because the age is very quickly trendy. Just keep it classic.
It does. If you paint something white, it'll still look good in 10 years' time. You know,
it won't. It'll look a bit darker. You'll need to repaint it quite again. You have to paint it a couple of times, otherwise being kicked out of business.
It won't be white. It'll be cream in 10 years' time. You know what I'm saying. But there was an interesting point made by the broker Atlantic Capital Markets on the Kingfisher chart. If you take a look at it, the stock obviously fell off a cliff in February, but came back really strongly. And the 50-day fell through the 200-day, but punched back up through it in mid-June. And since April, the stock has traded above the 50-day moving average, and that resulted in a technical golden cross formation, which is really strong. And the broker reckons on the back of that, well, they have a target of 317 pence, and this was published, I think, last week, in the next 4 to 6 weeks. And since the results were announced, the shares have continued climbing. So we're currently trading at 292p, and I think, you know, the stock does look set to push higher. They're targeting a level that the stock hit in 2018 of 317 pence, or 3.17 pence by early November. So, and again, I think we spoke about Travis Perkins a week or so ago as well, a couple of weeks back, and their results, their outlook was really good, both for house builders and also for home maintenance too, because of course a lot of the smaller builders have the accounts with Travis Perkins. So there's still plenty of money to spend. People are still spending money, and I think for companies like Kingfisher in particular, all the DIY chains, these are going to be really strong investments over the next few years. But once the airlines start flying again, once the pubs open up again, of course, you know, people start spending money on beer instead of paint. So there we go.
Exactly. Paint's a lot harder to drink. Right, anything else, Al?
Yeah, just wanted to touch on a company that listed here in August. They raised 1.3 million. It's an ASX listed company, so again, dual listing, and this is reflected in the valuation. A company called Castillo Copper, CCZ is the epic code. they have two key projects in Australia and projects in Zambia. I'm just going to run quickly through each one.
Do you amaze that whenever a company does a drilling, you know, does drilling and stuff? Everything's always high grade, isn't it? I've never seen a company ever do drill results out there and put very poor, low grade results. I've never seen any company do that ever.
I have seen low grade /disappointing grades, mentioned in statements. In a statement,
not in the title, not in the title of an RNS. No company have ever said that. They're all high grade, aren't they? Very high grade. Of course, sooner or later you're going to find something high grade amongst them all. But I've never seen that. Very average. It's an RSA. Very average. Nothing to see here. Move on.
This is the high grade podcast. Of course, you know, we're giving high grade investment information and ideas out here. So, you're right.
Not investment advice.
Hopefully, ideas.
Hopefully, objective information. You don't.
Yeah, indeed. So. I'm just going to tell you very quickly about the three projects because we're running short on time. But they have a project called Mount Oxide, which is some 150 kilometres north of Mount Isa Copperbelt in Queensland. The Area Prospect and the Big One Prospect, which are both Tier 1 copper targets, the company appointed Depco Drilling as lead contractor, Their drilling contractor has opted to take the majority of their fees in shares, which is obviously very encouraging. So Area is some 3,500 meters over 14 drill holes, and the Big One, which is the where we had the recent update to discuss, is some 35 drill holes over 4,300 square meters. And indeed, the rock chips taken from the Big One confirmed high grade. Open quotation, close quotation, high-grade copper mineralization. The best grade was 33.2%. The average was just under 7%. And on the back of that, they've put targets together and drilling will start in a few weeks. The company also owns the Kangai Copper Mine, which is an historic copper mine, one of Australia's highest graded historic copper mine, with a JORC inferred resource of 3.2 million tonnes at a lower grade of copper. Reckon there's some 107,000 tonnes of copper to be recovered from that mine. And again, drilling has been undertaken there, and a recent electromagnetic survey showed massive sulfide conductors, which I love, you know, a big conductor down on the ground conducting sulfide. But so they've identified new targets on top of the existing targets that were already there in the mine. In Zambia, they have in the Zambia pillar traditional copper belt, which is sited just south of the DRC. The Democratic Republic of Congo and Angola, which is situated to the north and northwest. They have the Luanshya, Makushi and Lumwana North and South projects. And all of these are sited, Luanshya for instance is close to the China Nonferrous Mining Corporation operations. There are three mines there with JORC proven probable reserves of 52 million tonnes. Makushi was tested for copper. Do you remember African Eagle Resources back in the noughties? Have identified a number of new strike zones after soil sampling last year. And Lumwana projects north and south are close to the Barrick Gold Project.
This is a lot of detail, Al, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, well,
too much, really. You know, investors can do all the research here.
I'm trying to give people some background so they know there's a lot of detail here. Then they go and look at the website and confirm for themselves. That's all. Yeah. A broken note from SI Capital. The upside is very exciting, and they say the area is a low capex.
Again, I've never seen a broken note that's not excited about their client's potential.
Of course, yeah, it's very important. But I'm trying to give some context and as much detail as I can, compressed into a short space of time. So there you have it. The company currently trades with a market cap of 26 million sterling and is dual listed on the ASX and in the UK. And shares are currently trading at 2.6p.
Castile. And that's
Castillo Copper.
So what is the ticker there?
CCZ. CCZ is there.
Yeah. Castillo is that's an area of Spain, isn't it?
Yeah, it has a, it is
it castle, doesn't it? Castillo, castle in Spain.
Castillo. Yeah, it implies that there is a Spanish derivation there, but so whether it's to do with Zambia or I have to say I don't know the origins of the name or why it was called Castillo Copper. But again, I'm sure if you dig around on the website, I've had a look at the website, and if you dig around, then there'll be a reason for that.
Yeah, well, Castle Copper, Castle Copper, mate, Copper.
Castle Copper, mate. Castle Main Fork could be Castle Main Forex Copper.
Yeah. Lovely.
There you have CCZ. It. There you have it.
Check that out and do your own research there. But lots of information from Alan Greenstock there. And Al, thanks for that, fella. And we'll speak to you next week.
Just speak next week, mate.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at 5. Kibo Energy, no mover. At 4, Alba Minerals, up 18% to 0.55. At 3, Tizian Life Sciences, up 2.8% to 146. At 2, it's Supply Atme Capital, down 3% to 0.495. And at 1, Valix, it's down 15% to 45 pence. All right, top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, it is Optibiotics exclusive distribution agreement. Right there. Were they up there? 11% a day. At 4, Tech Capital, Lucid e-commerce management appointment. Of course, that's Lucid appoints e-commerce content and social media manager. Right there. Who is that? We're checking out. Calvin Peters. Congratulations, Calvin. At 3, Symphony Environmental, UK Airport Group, introduces D2W biodegradable bag. At 2, Supply Atme Capital, update on business operations. And at 1, Open Orphan, hopefully a car hill on the... We've talked about that with Alan Green today. Open Orphan, of course, new 4.3 million challenge study contract win. And fair play, they're racking up the contracts. Well done to Cahill, he's a clever fella. And up 10.95% to 19 pence. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchas appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.